All right, welcome on to part two of our coach rankings here. We've got a lot to get to. I'm sure we'll have some disagreements as well. And we also want to talk about some categories like the best developmental coach, our best coach for a veteran contender, the best communicator, who we think has the best systems, the best playoff X's and O's, and maybe those most likely to move up or move down. So we'll get to that at the end. Let's pick up where we left off here, though, John. I mentioned Steve Nash as being in my group that's basically from 11 to 20. I had him towards the top of that group. You did not have him as highly, I take it.
Yeah, I had him 16th, and I think that's where we left off here. Yeah, I don't know. It's been kind of a weird year in Brooklyn. I feel like, I don't know, there are guys out there that I just kind of wonder sometimes what's out there for them. I do think losing D'Antoni hurt them. Obviously, they've had a ton of situations to deal with, but the thing was shuttering Bruce Brown for half the year. What was that?
Yeah, I think they were just trying to find some other solutions. He experimented last year. Throughout the season, they wanted to get Kessler Edwards and David Duke some time and just see whether those guys could play a little bit. I think as he's learned a little bit from Steve Kerr and just wanted to feel like he was still involving everybody, give people at least some feeling that they might play or some feeling that they know what NBA reps are like. So I get that. I don't think that he actually thought that those guys were better than Bruce Brown. It was just he knew what he had in Bruce Brown. And, you know, at that time, they actually weren't headed towards the ninth seed. So it felt like they had some games to play with a little bit here.
Yeah, that's true. They were in first place in the East not that long ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. Wild. I mean, when's the last time a team was that good? And the Warriors are almost kind of going through a similar streak now. But
yeah,
a team was number one in the East or close to it at that point. And then just lost like 12 straight games or whatever it was. I mean, yeah, it's
do you remember
it's amazing
the year
how many spots you lose in the standings when you do that.
Yeah. The only thing I compare it to, do you remember that one year Utah completely fell apart? I want to say maybe they traded Deron Williams in the middle there too. But it was
they were like
10 games over 500 at one point and finished like 30 and 52 or something. Like, it was unbelievable.
Okay, so as we're getting into, you've done 14 of yours so far. Who's number 15?
I'm going to put Chris Finch at number 15. Little bit of a, you know, he doesn't have as much experience, obviously. I think he's done a good job with the Wolves. And I guess this was in line with my priors because I thought he was among the best or about the best coach that was not an NBA head coach based on what he had done in the G League and some of the other things I had heard about him too. So I guess I'm not surprised that he's had success in Minnesota. So I think he's kind of earned his way up to the middle of the pack.
Yeah, I had him just right in this group with a bunch of these relatively new coaches, actually. It's going to be fascinating to get into some of them. I had him 18, but again, in this same tier. So
sure.
I can't really die on the hill that Chris Finch is the 18th rather than the 15th best coach in the NBA. I don't really have any empirical evidence.
Come on, let's throw down for 30 minutes about this.
Yeah, but Finch, it's interesting the way that they've done it, actually. I think they've disappointed a little bit on the offensive end. In part, that's been because they've just been playing defensive guys at the four, Jared Vanderbilt, McDaniels. I think it hasn't been quite as comical, but he's taken a little bit of a page out of Jim Boylan's book with the Bulls to get them to defend. They're starting to get carved up a little bit at times, but I mean, these guys are now 8 games over 500. You know, they're on pace for a 46-win season. I mean, that's way above where most people had them. And I mean, it really, as you watch them, it would be difficult. And that's one of the things that I like about it is, like, as I watch the Wolves, there are a few times where I'm like, what is this guy doing? Like, there aren't those obvious things that stick out to you where you're like, man, like, they could be doing this better. I think they've done a pretty good job getting what they have out of the current personnel. Everyone seems to be happy there. So, you know, Gerson Rosas kind of went out on a limb to hire Chris Finch when he did without a process. He came under fire for not hiring David Vanterpool, who, you know, I think they had enough exposure to him to know that they didn't want to hire him. And that move has absolutely worked out. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing Gerson Rosas did, now deposed general manager, that really did work out. And Chris Finch, I think, is a keeper there.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to go down as his best move.
I don't know. What about Culver?
Oh, man. It got so cold in here all of a sudden. What happened? Somebody opened a window or something.
So Finch is right in that group to me for sure. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned how his reputation was really good before this. Who's your number 16?
So I had Nash 16. And then I kind of had a group of veteran coaches who have some accomplishments, but have also displayed some warts. And a lot of them, the last 2 years, have gotten a lot of credit. So I actually had, this was like a separate tier for me, and I had six coaches in it. And the top guy in that tier I had was Billy Donovan, who I think is pretty effective at managing a regular season, getting through to his stars. You know, there's never any drama as teams and everything. And then he gets to the playoffs, he's totally on autopilot, and that's it.
You know, you've said that before. I've thought that when he had a real team that had any kind of versatility, because those OKC teams after KD left, between the inflexibility of Westbrook, who, you know, I mean, I think there was a time when we only saw Westbrook in Oklahoma City. We were like, yeah, maybe Donovan, like, you know, just hasn't been able to get as much out of Westbrook. Like, he's so inflexible. No, I think you can ask Frank Vogel and Mike D'Antoni and Scott Brooks last year as well about, you know, how easy it is to get Russell Westbrook to do something else. I thought in 2016, he did some really good things that were would belie your criticism.
Okay.
And then I just didn't think he had any options on the, even that 2020 OKC team. They had like the three small guards. They basically had five players on that whole team who are any good, that he just had to play those guys. You know, I will agree with you schematically. I thought, like, against the Jazz in that series that they lost them, like, they're putting two on the ball and pick and roll against a team that didn't really have very threatening pick and roll ball handler. You know, they're like double teaming Ricky Rubio 25 feet from the basket. Like, I didn't like that. So I'm getting wound up here remembering all these past playoffs. So I would give him, I think I agree with your criticisms some. I would push back on them some a little bit on him as a playoff coach.
Okay. I thought the 2020 OKC Houston series, like, he did enough bad things that I was like, whoa.
Did you recall any of them?
Just simple stuff. Like, at the end of game seven, offensive possession won't pull Steven Adams off the floor.
Yeah. Okay.
Right?
Yeah,
like, I mean, that was an obvious one.
I mean, he could get an offensive rebound for you? I don't know.
With like 1.8 on the clock?
Yeah, all right. I mean, that last possession at the end of game. So yeah, I had Billy at 14. I think he's done a very good job this year. I mean, he's probably top five in coach of the year this year for me. And what they've done defensively when they actually have had everyone healthy, I think, has been very impressive. He's gotten a lot out of a very limited roster. He's kept them together very well from a spirit perspective.
I'll say this, that bench right now is trash. Oh my God. I was watching them last night. It's like, wow, you're playing Derek Jones Jr., Tony Bradley, and Troy Brown at the same time and trying to score? Like, whoa. this is rough.
And he's done a good job. You know, DeRozan is really difficult to build around defensively. He's done a good job of going to these defensive units around DeRozan. They staggered DeRozan and LaVine pretty well. Now, would we feel differently about the Bulls if they hadn't won, you know, four games more than their point differential would have suggested so far this year? And I'm not going to give Billy credit for DeMar DeRozan hitting one-legged three-pointers at the end of games.
Yeah.
But still, I think he's done a very good job. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think we're really in that big of a difference here. I just kind of had Donovan in, it sounds like you might have in a slightly lower tier, but overall, we're pretty close on the ranking, I think.
Yeah, I agree. So who's your next guy?
I was high on this guy last year. I had him right about in this range.
Okay.
You expressed some surprise. I would say that the results since then have at least somewhat validated me, although we're getting now into this group of young coaches, some of them first-year head coaches, where we just haven't seen them in the playoffs. And so you're kind of like, would you rather go with the young coach who's, you know, shown some good upside in the regular season, but maybe he's not on a great team yet, he hasn't been in the playoffs? Or would you rather go with, you know, the Nate McMillan type, where the guy's got experience, he's been in the playoffs, hasn't necessarily covered himself in glory over the course of their entire career? And I think I would rather just go with the known unknown rather than the known known, but at least where the small sample has been good. And at the top of that list of guys for me is Mark Daigneault, who I think has done a wonderful job in Oklahoma City this year.
He has won more games than expectation, definitely.
How are these guys, with as young as they are and as tanky as they are, what are they, like 12th in defense?
They are 12th in defense. That is impressive. Yeah, can't deny that. Yeah, with the guys they are playing. I mean, Jeremiah Robinson, the fourth, fifth, and sixth in minutes for them this year, am I reading this right, are Darius Baisley,
Trey Mann. They've made into a good defensive player, by the way.
Trey Mann. Kevin Williams is sixth, who's actually good. Then Jeremiah Robinson Earl, seventh. Aaron Wiggins, eighth. Poku, ninth. Ty Jerome, 10th. Like, there's some badness here. Now,
you would have, like, they have no rim protection, right? Like, if you just look at their front court, which is usually the biggest determiner of your defense, like, they don't have the personnel to be 12th at all. And then you consider that they're all young, and you consider that, you know, this is a team that's obviously not trying to win this year. I think it's just been really impressive. I really liked some of his play calling at the end of games to get guys in position to succeed as well. I haven't really seen any just like obvious flubs when I've been watching them at the end of close games either. You know, timeout usage, that sort of stuff has been good. Challenge usage has been good. So I just really like his approach. And then just keeping these guys playing hard from a spirit perspective, given what the team is doing this year, I find very impressive also.
Yeah, I just think there's... It was hard for me to put him. I wrestled with him because I feel like we don't really know yet. I agree that the defensive performance this year is impressive. Personnel wise, we sort of assume that he's playing these bad players because those are his instructions. But we don't know. If he actually thinks Jeremiah Robinson Earl is better than Mike Muscala, that's a problem, right?
But John, Mike Muscala has a very severe ankle injury. Like, he hasn't played since the beginning of February. Clearly, there must be something wrong with them.
I guess there's just something wrong. Well,
but I will say this, John. Like, he's also on board with the organization. He's on board with development. He was on board last year when they lost 19 of their final 20 games.
Yeah,
or whatever. So I think I view that as a strength. Honestly, I mean, I don't think he actually thinks that Poku is better than Mike Muscala. Like, there's not a coach in the league that dumb.
Right. Right. So we get. Give him the benefit of the doubt, but I do want to see him in a game where he's playing in a scenario where he's playing games that actually matter. Like, I can't put him too high until that happens.
No, I understand that, and I'm willing to bet on the come with him. And also, like, by the way, when they were, what, I think they're 16 and 19 when Shea played last year, with not exactly an all-star cast then either.
Yeah.
His teams have way outperformed their point differential 2 years in a row.
That'll happen, yeah, when you lose by 80.
But and again, I don't want to say that's necessarily going to sustain, but at a minimum, he hasn't been like fucking up in close games.
Yeah, true.
Another guy I had in this group who I've been really impressed with is Willie Green this year.
Okay, so he was a guy, I actually moved him up from our episode one last week, because I had him lower, and then, you know, I went to New Orleans, I watched the Pelicans, I talked to some people, and I was like, okay, I got this guy too low.
But what did they say?
Just everyone seems pretty happy with him. And like, New Orleans is a place where, like, it wasn't hard to get people to dish on the coaches, right? So the fact that
David Griffin has given them all the ingredients they need as a coaching staff.
All the answers to the test, right? So
yeah. Oh yeah. That's what it was. Right.
Yeah,
yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. But so I also think as the year has gone on, like, the CJ trade definitely helped them, but I was down on him at the start of the year. Like, they were given so much rope to, like, Nickeil Alexander-Walker in particular. It was like, just put him out there and just let him kill them with shot selection. And I think he's figured some things out as the year has gone on about how to optimize his guards, about how to optimize Ingram. He's kind of made this Jackson Hayes, Valanciunas front court pairing work, at least to start games, which sort of buys him time while he's had injuries. Gotten a lot out of Herbert Jones. Wasn't afraid to say, look, I know Trey Murphy was drafted higher, but Herbert Jones is just better, and I'm just going to start him from day one.
Herbert Jones has just been like, to say, all right, we're basically basically just going to start this second round rookie and actually be right to start him. That's impressive.
Yeah. And then like them being 19th in defense with their personnel, I think is actually pretty good, right? They're designed to be an offensive team. So I give him credit for that. And there's, you know, a lot of bench limitations. He, even stuff like he deep six Satoransky almost right away. And I think that ended up being probably the right call, right? He didn't end up wasting too much time on that when he saw what was happening. So I think overall he's done a pretty commendable job in his first season there. We'll see how the stretch run goes there. Potentially reincorporating Zion is going to be possibly problematic, and obviously it's his first season and whatnot, but so far so good there, I would say.
Yeah, another guy has just been able to keep him going from a spirit standpoint. I can't remember whether they started 6-22 last year or this year, but they start 6-22.
They start every year 6-22, don't they? Because I actually thought it was the year before with Gentry that they started 6-22.
But he's kept them together. I mean, when Brandon Ingram's been available, they've been a 500 team, which is really impressive. Yeah. I mean, I would pay him the ultimate compliment. Mm-hmm. I believe that Willie Green, the coach, is such a good coach that he would realize that he shouldn't have played Willie Green, the player. Which for those of you who did not follow the NBA
Willie Green, the player, was big on the long twos.
Yeah, I mean, he was like, Doc Rivers would just like keep playing him. I think didn't he play for the Clippers? Like, he got a lot of tick for them. Yeah. Willie Green, the player, was, I mean, because I assume that because of the personal aspects that made him a good coach, that's why all of his coaches loved him. But yeah, he was not a guy who should have been getting a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
Back then. Okay, who else we got here?
Nate McMillan.
Had him in a lower group here of the kind of known knowns, veterans, won't kill you. I'm just basically, the entire argument for having him higher was what he did last year. I don't think he's covered himself in glory this year. I don't think he really covered himself in glory previous to that. Although I'm sure his defenders would say, hey, what happened to the Pacers after he left? But I think he's, as a playoff coach, I'm not wowed by him. He still hasn't figured out what to do against a switching defense. And I think he's just fine.
I don't really have a lot to say as a retort. I mean, I think he gets regular season results. Like, I don't think he's that far away from being Billy Donovan, let me put it that way. No,
that's reasonable. I think I would say McMillan did one of his best jobs in the playoffs, but also they had some pretty easy matchups last year to get to the conference finals. And I would say they've disappointed slightly. Like, their defense has been atrocious this year. Like, I don't think they should be this bad.
I agree with that. They did have a good game plan for the Knicks in the first round.
Yeah. No, that's true. They completely shut down Julius Randle. Again, out coaching Tom Thibodeau in the playoffs. I'm not going to give you too much credit for that.
This is the fun part here.
Yeah. So I had McMillan at number 21. What did you have him at?
I had him at 19.
Okay. Yeah. I was hopeful that maybe they would be able to continue what they did in the playoffs last year, at least to some degree, and, you know, be a fourth or fifth seed. And I might have him higher if that were the case. But also, he's got a very, very long track record. Not that guys can't turn over a new leaf. We'll get to a couple of those. But
yeah.
I had him a little bit below some of these other guys here because I just think they have a little more upside. I just don't think Nate McMillan has much upside as a coach. My number 19.
Okay.
I Dagnall 16, Green 17, Finch 18. Closing out this year, I have two more.
Okay.
At 19 and 20. Jason Kidd is my number 19 coach.
I had him at 21. I wasn't sure what to do with him. Okay. So clearly, conceptually, he's done a lot better job defensively here than he did in Milwaukee, right? Like, their game
last night against the Jazz. They were really connected. They did a great job of not guarding the guys who need to not be guarded on the Jazz. I thought they had one of the best defensive performances against the Jazz that I've seen all year.
Yeah, and you know that they do a great job taking away transition too, which I think I really noticed the two Memphis games. They just weren't going to allow the Grizzlies to run, and they were going to play offense in such a way that the Grizzlies couldn't run, which I thought was pretty clever. The two things lurking in the background with Kidd, or the main thing, you know, at some point he's going to burn this to the ground, right? There's no chance this ends well.
don't know. They said that in L.A. and it didn't happen.
He did not. He did not do what many people thought he would do. That is true.
I don't know. I think that's being a little like, yes, you know, there was the Brooklyn attempted coup, and then in Milwaukee there was, you know, trying to get more of a personnel voice and trying to do the wanting to do the Carter Williams trade, which was a disaster, and
Rashad Vaughn.
Yeah, that was a Jeff Schwartz thing, right? Although it was Jeff Schwartz,
agent too. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's a possibility. It might be like too facile to say that he's going to do that. I mean, also, he's working, although I guess he was great friends with the Edens as well, and well known in the Nets organization as well. So that doesn't preclude it. But, you know, they obviously believed in his character a lot to bring him in. That was a big part of why he's even there. And I think that's his, there hasn't been any weird shit yet, right? I mean, even Porzingis, he got him to buy in more. So I think he's done a great job this year. I mean, if you're judging him solely on what he's done this year, I think clearly he's in the top half of the league as a coach just this regular season.
I would agree with that. Yeah, now, I'm just waiting. Just waiting for the other shoe to drop with him.
Yeah. So, and that's, he could be higher. Let's see what happens in the playoffs. I think that'll be fascinating for him. And then another coach that I mean, and now Jason Kidd, I tell this story sometimes. Danny and I were recording coach rankings. I think it was in, what would that have been, 2018. And literally as we were recording the segment in which we were ranking him last in the league, news came in that he was fired.
So he's definitely
moved up in my estimation. Okay. And another guy who has is JB Bickerstaff, who I have at number 20.
Yes, I had him at number 20 also. I think, I mean, obviously they're number four in defense this year. It's funny because this goes back to what he was our coach in Memphis, obviously. And he just loves big lineups. And he made it work. And everyone thought it wouldn't work. And no, it actually worked. So I think he gets a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, and to be fourth in defense with Kevin Love, Lauri Markkanen, Jetty Osman, Darius Garland. Like, yeah, they got the two. They've got Mobley and they've got Jared Allen. Who's the third best defender on this team? Okoro? Like, he's probably below average as like your primary wing defender.
It's Okoro by default, and he doesn't play a lot of fourth quarters, right? Because he's so limited offensively. So I think he's done a nice job, and he's had to patch together some lineups too. I mean, there's been a lot of Brandon Goodwin, Dean Wade kind of fourth quarters going on there.
No, and they really have just had a ton of injuries in ways that probably aren't appreciated as much because they've continued to exceed expectations even so. So certainly based, you know, he's in the coach of the year conversation this year. I haven't seen him at all in the playoffs. The one time he was in the playoffs, obviously it was with a dysfunctional Houston team, but he didn't do a great job there either. And then, so I do think there is kind of still some old school inflexibility element there, but they're not going to be favored to win a playoff series this year either. You know, this could just be one of these, hey, this is this year's surprise team. We're giving the coach too much credit. But again, I like the upside of him more so than some who are below him. I mean, he's done a great job this year, and I don't think you can say that about some of the
others. Yeah, I mean, I guess because I've also seen him, like, I know, like, just like seeing him run a practice and like keep a locker room pointed in the right direction and all that, like, he's pretty drama free.
Yeah. And again, if you can get a young team to defend, I'm always really impressed by that.
Yes. Yeah. It's a great
point. So
that
ended my 11 through 20 tier. Who else do we need to talk about here?
So I had two guys sort of at the back end of this tier. First one is Tom Thibodeau, who, look, he has his weaknesses and he's getting his arrows this year. But I do think he accomplishes a lot for a team just in terms of preparation. And like, I don't know, last year with the Knicks, I think people forget like what a jarring difference it was from your typical shit show Knicks to like, oh, these guys are actually prepared and dug in and they're like, whoa, what happened here? So predictably, I mean, I do think he's a year one coach in a lot of ways, right? You're not hiring him for long-term excellence as much. And we've seen some of that this year, but there was also some regression that I think had to be baked in. But I also think it's interesting, like a lot of his worst weaknesses haven't really come to the fore this year, right? Because they have so many average players that he hasn't done the thing where he plays his five best players 47 minutes.
RJ ankle injury was pretty sad.
That was a bad one. Yeah, can't argue that.
I had Tom Thibodeau 27th. And the reason for that, although in a group from 21 to 28. So I, you know, you could argue he could be as high as 21. But
Okay, fair.
But the criteria that we had at the start of this, which I might want to reiterate, is you're signing this coach to a four-year contract, and who do you want coaching your team for the next 4 years? And number one, he's terrible in the playoffs. I mean, I think this is, last year was the, relative to the regular season, obviously, but last year was, I think, the third time that he's lost in game five in a series with home court advantage. That's not good.
Wow. That's hard to do.
And then you also, like, just very unimaginative offense, particularly in the playoffs. Totally inflexible as far as like not playing your traditional rim protecting center,
which is crazy, because like last night against Sacramento, they played Randall at five and just murdered them. Like, it just wasn't even funny. But I don't think they would have done it except Mitchell Robinson had to come out 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah. Now, I do think that he's maybe turning over a little bit of a new leaf with the team realizing they're not making the playoffs and he's not going to go insane trying to win every game. He's actually playing some of the young guys now, like, partially due to injury, but still, you know, like Jericho Sims, he's actually playing him over Taj Gibson. You know,
yes. Like, yeah.
36-year-old Taj Gibson, not maybe in the Knicks' long-term plans. Let's get a look at Jericho Sims. But there have been reports of tension, of like him not wanting to play Cam Reddish, just some of all the old Thibodeau stuff popping up again. It just doesn't seem like he can get along with a front office over 4 years, and there's just no upside there. That was the big reason, even after last year when he got them a lot better, I still was kind of lukewarm on the hiring. I only ranked him, I think, 19th last year, because it's just, especially because he's not a good playoff coach, it's like, all right, you can get a bump for a year or two, but then like, what good does that really do you in the grand scheme of things? And oh yeah, by the way, if I'm talking about who I want to hire, he might get me fired too as a front office guy. So that's why I have him lower. I do think he gets guys to play hard. He's rehabilitated his reputation some in New York. I mean, am I crazy to have him this low?
I see, there's so many unproven guys that we're getting into that it's hard to say, because we're getting into guys where we just don't know a whole hell of a lot about.
Well, let me ask you this. Would you rather have Dwayne Casey or Tom Thibodeau?
I wrestled with that because Casey was the next guy on my board. So it was really close for me. And I'm not sure I know the answer.
I would rather have Casey. I had Casey 24 and Thibodeau 27.
I also had Casey 24. We don't have a lot to go on from his Detroit tenure, right?
I wish they were a little better defensively this year. Their personnel on the offensive end is so atrocious. They have one guy on the team who can shoot, who plays the 1-3 positions other than Cade.
Yeah, yeah. You're saying that Killian Hayes can't shoot?
Now, Casey, and he was very good in Toronto. Like, he did win a Coach of the Year. Yeah, he ended up getting fired. I don't think he was amazing in the playoffs. I don't think he was horrible in the playoffs. And those teams, before they got Kawhi Leonard, were more regular season type of teams.
Yeah.
He usually gets a lot out of his bench. I don't think his teams make mistakes. Like, they usually play pretty hard. I think he's just a totally solid coach. You know, he and McMillan, I think, have some similarities of just kind of more old school NBA coaches, not the most progressive philosophy, but get their team to play hard. You know, I think Casey maybe is better in the locker room than McMillan. You know, you have seen some infighting on McMillan teams, and his part of his philosophy was, you know, I'm not going to like handhold guys or anything in the locker room. I don't change that much with the Hawks. So,
right.
I mean, Casey to me is like totally competent. You know, like if he got another job after Detroit, you know, if that ends, and they even gave him an extension as well. If he got another job after Detroit, I don't think that I would have a problem with that.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
James Borrego, what do you make of him?
He's so, number 22. I know. I had him higher last year. I mean, I think Charlotte's done some good stuff on the player development front, especially. But defensively, I mean, this team is just so shitty that I can't put him higher than 25th. Like and the stuff they do is so bad. Some of their mistakes. Like, sometimes they just look like they don't give a shit. Or they'll end up with four guys on the baseline a lot and just give up these jailbreak four-on-ones going the other way. So I just don't know what's going on there.
Their personnel isn't that bad defensively.
Correct.
You know, they've got some decent wings with some length. Like, they should be a little bit better than they are, I think. And yeah, it just, I don't really, he's got a young team. I don't think he's done a bad job with the Hornets, but, and they've kind of like, they'll have these portions of the season where they exceed expectations, and, you know, they were great in close games last year. But yeah, I mean, you're right. They just have so many times where you're watching them and like, this is just a track meet. Like, this isn't even a real basketball game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So I do think he has some good modern philosophies. He'll try to, you know, force turnovers or switch a lot or junk it up with zones, whatever. Like, he'll try some of that stuff. But still, it doesn't seem like, all right, this is it. You never watch this team, you're like, oh, this is a really disciplined team here.
It's funny, you because I do watch them and say that exact same sentence, but the letters UN are added in the middle.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think he's, I'll give him some credit that he didn't just give LaMelo like all of the rope immediately. Like,
if he LaMelo's actually, even well, now, he'll yeah. pull him in fourth quarters, even now. I give him credit for that.
Right. But yeah, I do wonder where they are with him as a coach, you know, in the next year or two, that's something that maybe could be a situation where they end up wanting a new voice in there if they kind of stagnate.
Yeah, I definitely have wondered that myself.
What do you make of, there are three other coaches who are new this year that I also had in this group.
Yep.
Chauncey Billups, Wes Unseld Jr., and Jamal Mosley. What do you make of those guys? And what order did you end up putting them?
I had them 26, 27, 28. I went Unseld, Billups, Mosley. Unseld, I thought, has gotten the most results, especially early in the year. He's actually kept them pretty competent considering Beal, you know, is out for the year now. They went sideways there for a little bit. Defensively, they could maybe be a little better still. Some of the stuff juggling three centers has been a little baffling before they finally traded Harrell. So,
yeah, I think he was kind of under orders to play Thomas Bryant during that period when things really went poorly.
Yeah, sort of had that vibe, but it was like they kind of completely forgot about Daniel Gafford for like a solid month there. I at the same time, I don't have some overwhelming criticism of them, and it looks like they're going to end up with like pretty close to where you would have projected them at the start of the year. It's his first season. I think we're still learning about him. I don't know. Do you have any hot takes on him?
Not really. I think he's had some moments in game that I've liked reasonably well. The player usage has been odd at times, but he has to play Rui Hachimura. He has to play Thomas Bryant. Bradley Beal comes back in. Like, he and Dinwiddie don't like each other. And obviously, Unseld didn't really seem to help much with that situation. I would give it a incomplete. I don't think he's done a poor job. A lot of people I respect were saying he was doing well at the beginning, but they just kind of got lucky from a point differential.
Yeah, exactly.
Right at the start.
Yeah.
So
yeah. He also missed a ton of games there for a while where Joe Blair was coaching the team.
Yeah. I had Billups 25 and Unseld 26. Again, I'm not going to fight you if you have Unseld higher than Billups.
This is outrageous. That is totally indefensible.
Yeah. Starting the season off with, hey, let's get some more pressure on the perimeter. Let's put two on the ball. We're going to fly around. Like, we played this drop coverage. That sucks. Well, okay. But if you're going to have Yusuf Nurkic 25 feet from the basket and you've got Dame and CJ as two of your help defenders, it may not go too well for you. You know, they're just giving up a ton of threes early on. He was like, you know, wants Robert Covington to be his stopper and pressuring the ball full court. And, you know, anybody who's watched Robert Covington Covington knows that he's better as a help defender than your one-on-one pressure guy. So I think it took him a while to figure it out, but this is another team that hasn't let go of the rope. If they weren't tanking, they probably would have made the play-in despite Dame said, you know, he hasn't missed the whole year, but he's going to miss like two-thirds of the year, and he was ineffective in the other time. They've developed Simons pretty well. Nasir Little has developed pretty well this year. So I think it looked really bad at first. You know, if we did these rankings a month into the season, I probably would have had him 30th.
Yeah, there's a decent 29th. Chance of that. Yeah, he would have been down there, certainly.
But, you know, still incomplete. He's not going to have a real team the rest of the year, so he's not going to have much opportunity to move up the rest of the way. How about Mosley?
I had him 28th. I, like, again, is how much is there really to say here? You know, it's a young team that's not really trying to win. They have very little offensive talent. I do think they could get the ball more to Franz Wagner at times and feature the guards less.
I noticed that last week when we did their game against the Pacers.
So that, I mean, that would be probably the harshest critique I could offer. I mean, Carter and Bamba seem to have come along and got better. You know, Suggs was pretty bad at the start and seems to have rounded into shape a little bit.
Yeah, is he over 20% on threes now?
Oh, well, let's not get crazy. I mean, I don't know if he's come that far. Oh, no, 22.6. All right, here we go. so, I just don't have a lot to work with. I want to see him with more of a real team. I don't have any huge demerits here, but there's just not a lot to discuss, and they're really bad right now.
They are, I think, and I think he's also been, they're just having a weird year, right? Like Markelle Fultz took forever to come back. They knew that this is a gap year from the very beginning of the season. Suggs has gotten a ton of entitlement minutes. He's really killed them. You know, like if they were trying to win games, yeah, you know, they'd play Gary Harris. They'd start Gary Harris at the two next to Cole Anthony, and maybe they'd play Terrence Ross a lot more. They'd make Franz Wagner the four. This Bamba Carter together thing, they probably wouldn't really do much of that. They would have played Robin Lopez as the backup center, and they probably could have been a lot more respectable than they have been if they've done all those things. They could not play Admiral Schofield as the backup center, you know, these types of things when you've got Robin Lopez available. So I would give him an incomplete. You know, there were a few things in this Pacers game that I watched recently where I thought they really could have done a better job. You know, you mentioned the late game play calling where they could have, Wagner is having this great game and they just forget about him in the fourth quarter and overtime. So I think all that is, it's just too hard to judge him because this is clearly so many guys playing entitlement minutes. And as long as everyone's happy there at this point and they get their draft pick, next year when Isaac comes back and they got Fultz, they might actually have kind of a deep team. They'll have another draft pick. That's when, like, this actually starts for him.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
So I had two guys in my bottom tier.
I think I had the same two guys.
Steven Silas at number 29. The Rockets are atrocious defensively. Another one of these teams that you see where you're like, yeah, this is not a disciplined team. Obviously, it's, you know, Jalen Green for a lot of the year has been one of the worst regular players in the NBA. Kevin Porter Jr. will have moments, but he also will just have these games with six turnovers. He doesn't really have a true point guard on the roster. They're not really trying to win this year. They signed Daniel Tice and they just started him because they signed him and they said they would probably start him when they signed him. And like he was saddled with that for a while and Tice was terrible. So again, it's been difficult for him to be sure. But I also, this is one of those ones where it's like, what is your argument for keeping your job at this point?
They just always look like a team that rolled the balls out, is the best way I can describe it. And so, I mean, yeah, he's, you know, he was hired to coach James Harden and that's not what happened there at all. So you feel for him because he got a raw deal there, but he also, I would say he's not made the most of that deal either. And even like among the veteran guys, like Christian Wood half-asses it all the time. So, you know, just is he getting the most out of his guys? I sort of question that. And then the discipline at both ends, I think, leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, every once in a while they can look frisky. They also have, what, 12 and 15 game losing streaks this season?
Yeah, and they closed last year, what, were they like 6-45 at the end of last year or something? It was bad.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, it was something. It wasn't very good. I mean,
and like they had some actual players, you know what I mean? Like it shouldn't have been that bad.
I think, you know, he's on board with management. I don't think that the team, you know, he's had to manage some difficult personalities. I don't think they've fallen apart from a togetherness standpoint. Jalen Green has taken some steps forward. He's empowered Şengün. You know, it hasn't been terrible. Like if you gave him a real team, I'm not going to be like, oh yeah, he's going to drive this team into the ground by any means. Again, I like the fact that he's number 29 to me speaks to, hey, we're in a pretty good place right now.
I would agree with that. Yes. Yeah.
And then the person who unfortunately doesn't appear to have the answers to the test.
I had him 29th. I mean, he's at least done stuff in the league, right? Like he got Phoenix to a conference finals. Okay. So where I ended up with, cause I thought about putting him more in like the Dwayne Casey territory. And what I just ended up with is Alvin Gentry coaching this team is just not, it's not going to work, right? Like it's not it. So yeah. He's a, you know, he's an interim. He inherited with what, you know, he inherited a Luke Walton team did we have him 30th last year?
He was around there. I can tell you what I had him.
He was certainly 30-ish. Right? He definitely wasn't higher than 29.
I had him at 28. Right. I had Scott Brooks one spot below Luke Walton last year.
Okay.
And Steven Silas was 27.
We had Boylan 30th, I think.
Well, that would have been 2 years ago.
Was that 2 years ago already? Wow. Yeah. I gotta check my punch clock and see when I rang it out.
So yeah, actually that's a good time now to talk about our biggest risers and biggest fallers.
Okay.
Over the last couple of years here, or the last year. So I had Thibodeau, you had Thibodeau, I think above me, right? I had him at 19. I moved him down to 27 this year.
I want to say last year I had him like at 12 or something. I moved him to 23.
Nash, I had at 9 last year. I moved him down to 11. I probably should have him a little bit lower. Doc Rivers went from 8 to 13 for me.
Yeah, I made a similar move with him. Popovich, I want to say I had him like 5th or something last year. I moved him to 13th.
Yeah, and I've been ahead of you. I had Pop at 11 last year, and now I actually had him in the low 20s this year. Rick Carlisle was a huge faller for me, actually. I had him 4 last year in the top tier, and yeah. I moved him down to tier 3, number 12.
I didn't go down as far for him. I'm trying to see who else would have taken a drop for me. I'm not sure there's anyone else who like shifted more than a couple spots. The guy that moved up a lot was Monty Williams.
Yeah. Yeah, I had him 10 last year, which seemed like too high probably for a lot of people at this time last year, but now he's my number 2 this year.
Yeah, yep, me too.
Steve Kerr was 13 for me last year, and I have him now at number 4 in tier 2.
I want to say I moved him up too. I want to say I had him like 8th or something last year. I don't have my list in front of me, so I'm going off of memory, but I definitely moved him up from last year.
Michael Malone, I moved from 14 up to 8.
Yes, we argued about him because I kept him in the same spot, and you went from being the anti-Malone guy to the pro-Malone guy. JB Bickerstaff moved up.
Oh, big time. Yeah. He was 30th for me last year, and I moved him up 20th this year. I was talking to a mutual friend of ours who said maybe the fact that guys move around so much means that you just ranking coaches is really hard.
That's a fair point. There's a lot to evaluate that we don't totally know. So I do think it's hard. Yes.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Chris Finch moved way up for me. I mean, he had just been hired when we did this last year. So he was kind of more of an incomplete. I liked his potential. And that was really, really nice to see. Who else am I missing here? Yeah, I think that's about it. I actually moved Frank Vogel up from 9 last year to 6 because they defended so well when they had like nobody available last year. That was actually a positive data.
Wow. Yeah, he remains a difficult eval because of all that's going on there.
Yeah, I think so. Well, they're going to try to get through the season with him, John.
What a ringing endorsement that is.
If we could swallow this awful tasting pill, I'll try not to throw it up, basically, is what it's like what you're talking about.
Like, man.
But I think he's a better coach than that, obviously. So, and Taylor Jenkins moved up for me from 16 to 10. That was pretty good.
I moved him up too. I want to say I had him 15th and I moved him to 9th, maybe.
Yeah. All right. Who would you have as the best developmental coach in the NBA?
I think Spoelstra and Nurse probably have the best cases. Popovich still has to be in the discussion. Those would probably be the three I'd have at the top of the class.
Yeah, I would say so. Nurse, I got a downgrade for not giving the young players on the roster any kind of a chance at all.
Well, I mean, he's given
guys he likes.
Yeah, he's given Scottie Barnes a chance, obviously, but he's only used 6 players the entire season.
Yeah, I think Spo would have to be up there. I do think the Warriors are starting to come around as far as development. They've upgraded their staff, but too early to say on that one.
Memphis would have to be in here, too. I mean, Desmond Bain has, you know, the progress he's made and what they did with having him play on the ball in Summer League, I think really was, like, impactfully helpful. And their other younger players have generally gone in the right direction, too. So I would say they'd be up there.
How about Malone and Denver?
Oh, I completely neglected. They do a great job. Yeah, yeah. They do a fantastic job on player development. I think they draft guys, and they really, like, there's synergy there with the coach in front office, and they believe the guys they draft him and really give them every chance to succeed.
Yeah, but I would agree with you. I think Spoelstra, and this ranking is probably much more of a system thing than maybe anything else when you're really talking about a staff and organizational philosophy being in synergy with the front office.
It's very organization dependent because the coach, having been on the front lines of this, the coach cannot be focused on player development while the regular season is going on. Like, that is not a thing that will ever happen. There are too many high level things that the coach has to deal with that are just more important. And so they have to have, like, kind of as a CEO, they have to have a system in place that can run itself. And yep. That's how they succeed.
The best coach for a veteran contender.
Best coach for a veteran contender. I would put Ty Lue up there, right?
Yep.
It's most of the guys who are at the top of our list, right? Like, they've won big, and that's why we have them up there, right? So you would say,
sure,
Spoelstra, Monty, Nurse, Kerr, like all those guys, right?
Yep. No, I would agree. I mean, maybe Rick Carlisle would be higher on this. That's a veteran team that just kind of runs itself, and from an emotional standpoint, and he's just a really good playoff coach.
Yeah. Yeah, I could agree with that.
Best communicator.
I think Popovich has to be in this discussion.
Oh, I disagree with you. I think there are definitely plenty of guys that just didn't want to be in that Spurs system and just didn't. I don't think they were a good brand for a lot of guys as far as, like, wanting to go there necessarily.
Okay.
I mean, the
Kawhi thing you could argue is a turning point, right?
Yeah, I think you could. And it's just like, I think the Spurs, a lot of what they did was getting guys who, you know, quote unquote, getting guys who are over themselves, right? Well, not every player is over themselves. And it's great if you can have Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Tim Duncan all there to kind of run things. And those are the guys you brought in. But, you know, who is the kind of bad seed that Pop has, like, gotten through? He got a little bit out of Steven Jackson.
Steven Jackson would be a notable one at the beginning of their run. I'm trying to think.
But then Steven Jackson left.
Boris Diaw was way sideways with Charlotte, and they brought him in and rehabilitated him.
Yeah. Sideways is one way to put it. That's true. But I'm not saying he's bad at it. I think, you know, I might have had Doc Rivers there until this
thing. Like, in 2008, Doc might have been number one on this list. I'm not sure he's there anymore.
Yeah, and also, I think there's a lot of infighting with that 1920 Clippers group as well.
Yeah.
You know, he's younger in this, but Steve Nash, I think that's a big part of what I've liked about him. Kerr would be up there for me, too, even though he's had his foibles. You know, the KD thing kind of unraveled a little bit. I think number one to me would be Monty Williams, though.
Yeah.
And he's just the one guy that no one has ever had anything bad to say about on a personal level as a coach.
Yeah.
You know, even KD, like, kind of got sick of Steve Kerr. You know, there's, and Ty Lue would probably be number two.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Best system.
So I think Quinn Snyder's going to get some votes here, right?
Yep. He's a Bud. It's got to be in there too.
Yes.
I can't go there with Kerr because I think his system is just, we've never seen it succeed without Steph Curry.
It's an interesting system. I don't know if it's the best one.
I mean, it's the best one for Steph Curry. That definitely unlocks Steph Curry as an all-time player.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen him do anything else other than that. I mean, he almost is just too, he can't just do the easy, simple thing. It's like too boring for him sometimes.
Right.
I would say Quinn Snyder would probably be my guy, I think, for the best system with maybe Bud number two.
Mm-hmm. I think that's fair. I think both of them really, they figured out how to maximize what they had, which, I mean, especially to maximize regular season wins with what they had. I mean, they really figured it out, both those two.
Best motivator.
Hard to know because we're not in the room. I mean, again, I think Monty's going to get a lot of votes here, though. Like, if you ask the players, I think Monty would get a lot of votes.
No, I think that's really true. It's probably good. I mean, of just, you know, who's getting their team to play the hardest every night? I think maybe
Spo would have to be in there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, they do it in kind of different ways. I mean, that's kind of why I differentiate between communicator and motivator. I kind of view that as like, all right, your team is playing hard no matter what at all times. Yeah, I'd probably have to say Spo would be my pick there. Couple more. Best playoff X's and O's.
This is a Rick Carlisle category. I think Tyronn Lue rates really highly here too, and Nick Nurse.
Those would probably be my three. Spo does pretty good, I think. But like Nurse and Carlisle, you know, and I would say Nurse and Carlisle would be my two of just guys who've gone to weird shit when it just wasn't working and just kind of found a way to jump through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Most likely to move up.
Like if we were, when we do this a year from now, right. I could see Willie Green and Chris Finch moving up.
How about Ime Udoka?
Yes, definitely.
Although you had him very high
already. I had him at 10 already. But yeah, sure. I mean, depending on what happens here.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these guys are going to have opportunities. You know, I think Steve Kerr, if the Warriors win it, could get back into that top group. Taylor Jenkins, if the Grizz make it to the conference finals.
Yeah.
Is, you know, because he's just in the regular season, he's probably higher than 10th. You know, if Philly does well, Doc Rivers could erase some of the sins of the past 2 years.
Jason Kidd, too.
Yeah, I mean, you've kind of got these guys who haven't done it necessarily in the playoffs who are younger and might look pretty good. And then you've got these guys who've kind of had some more failures that could move up. Most likely to move down, Snyder.
Hard to say because we would already moved him down, right? Like how much further down would you really move Quinn Snyder if they lost in the first round this year?
Okay, yeah, that's. I mean, there might be some guys who just come up above him though who do perform well in the playoffs.
Yeah, like if Doc loses to like Cleveland in the first round or something, I think he might end up moving down.
Oh man, no, that's tough. That's tough. Hardest to rank for you. Last one.
There were. I mean, all the new guys definitely.
Let's leave the new guys out. The guys who have a little more of a track record.
Jason Kidd.
Yeah. Frank Vogel, because this season was just such a complete shit show.
He was. So that was the other name that I was going to say. Those are probably the two most challenging.
Agreed. All right. This is fun. Hopefully we pissed off everyone in the coaching community other than Eric Spoelstra. And who is the coach you would least like to have pissed off at you? That's a question.
The coach you would least like to have pissed off at you. That might be the best question.
Well, I've certainly experienced it with Rick Carlisle, but I didn't take that personally because, you know, that's just a regular Tuesday for Rick Carlisle.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think who's the coach that would just like,
I think it would be, I would actually, the one who is like actually a really nice guy and I would feel bad. I think that's what I would more like Mark Daigneault or something like that. Like if he was pissed off at me.
I mean, like Alvin Gentry is the best person in the world. Like every single person he's worked with in the league absolutely loves him.
Yeah. Alvin's got plenty of money though. Like he's been around for a long time. He's too happy. He's not going to get angry at anyone other than David Griffin, I don't think. I wouldn't want Steve Nash to be mad at me. I really like Steve Nash.
No, there's not the guy right now though where it's like Wes Unseld Sr. or something where you're like, oh, I definitely do not want that guy to be mad at me. You know, I don't think there's quite anybody like that coaching right now.
Yeah, the most physically intimidating coach in the NBA. That could be a separate podcast on its own.
Yeah,
Jamal Mosley might get me fired. He might turn all the superstars against me. So. All right. We're going off the rails here.
Yeah, very
much so. This is fun, and we'll talk to you all again next week. Till then.